Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP for short, here in Berlin. In this podcast, we discuss what's on the minds of policymakers, or at the very least, what should be on their minds. Today, we're talking cybersecurity and asking just how robust Europe's cyber defence capabilities are in the face of increasingly sophisticated threats, from spyware that snoops on civil society organisations to ransomware that paralyses hospitals. To find out how Europe can safeguard our increasingly online and digitally connected lives and infrastructure, we're taking a peek today at a new SWP research project called the European Repository of Cyber Incidents, an open-source database of cyber attacks. SWP is working on this repository together with the Universities of Heidelberg and Innsbruck and the Cyber Policy Institute in Estonia. I'm your host, Esme Nicholson, and to talk more about the European Repository of Cyber Incidents, I'm joined today by two of its researchers. My first guest is Dr. Annegret Bendieck, a senior fellow at SWP, whose work focuses on the regulatory side of digital geopolitics and EU cyber diplomacy, security and defence. Annegret, thank you for being here today and welcome.
Thank you so much for your invitation.
And my second guest is, down the line from Brussels, Jakob Bund from SWP's Europe Research Division, who is the Threat Intelligence Liaison for the repository. Jakob, thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Glad to be here.
So before we get to the nitty-gritty, perhaps we can start by setting the scene to give an idea of the kind of threats Europe currently faces. Jakob, perhaps you could start us off.
Cyberspace is a mirror for state relations. And if tensions rise between states, that also shows in cyberspace. And one trend that stands out most concerningly is that we are observing a move towards critical infrastructure targeting, certainly among the main competitors that European states are facing. And if we single out a particular cluster of activity here and look at Russian groups and their activity, in particular their targeting of entities in Germany, if we look back to 2015, we could, for example, take a look at the hack of the network of the German parliament, the Bundestag, where we saw elements of the Russian military intelligence service, GRU, going after the offices of parliamentarians that are linked to this network with what appears to be a clear espionage focus. If we fast forward to 2021, we'll see that the Ghostwriter campaign also targeting parliamentarians possibly to develop material for disinformation campaigns to interfere in the federal elections. And we notice that this is markedly more aggressive, not just collecting information, but actually leveraging this information to influence domestic political processes. And now earlier this month, we had the head of Germany's domestic intelligence service warn of the possible targeting of liquefied natural gas terminals, liquefied natural gas being one of the key resources that Germany has turned to make up for Russian gas imports that it has weaned itself off in response to Russia's war against Ukraine. And we realize all of a sudden we're talking about something as critical and essential to the functioning of societies as the electricity supply. Now, critical infrastructure probing goes back quite some time, but it is now embedded in a situation where, in the case of Russia, we're looking at a full-scale assault that it has conducted on Ukraine, and it might be pointing its cyber capabilities at the pressure points of Ukraine's partners to shape their involvement in the conflict and the kind of assistance they provide. But we also have actors that might not per se care about disrupting or causing harm to critical infrastructure systems or the holders of sensitive data, but it is a very convenient way to exert pressure. That's the big phenomenon that has been making headlines. Criminal activity threatening to influence the lives of individuals through the release of sensitive data, such as their healthcare information.
thank you for setting the scene there. Anna Greet, if I can turn to you and turn to the project. Could you briefly describe it? What does it offer that other research doesn't? And who exactly is it for?
We saw the need to set up a European repository on cyber incidents, looking very much at the European scale of this new conflict and trying to set up an open source, academically sound and interdisciplinary database. And this is in the opposite to other databases and data sets we know, mostly coming out of the US and looking very much at the US scale and not so much at the European attractiveness of these cyber incidents. And therefore, we joined forces among partners in Germany, Austria, Belgium, Estonia, and Poland, and trying really closely to observe what is happening in cyberspace. And we are trying to define a common scientific benchmark for assessing and comparing these life cycle of cyber incidents to make use of this data for cyber conflict research. And it's also important that our European repository is politically independent. So we look at all attackers, also coming from the European Union, and not so much that we have been affected, but also, of course, we have member states very active, also in active cyber defense in this space. And therefore, of course, when we look at the European Union, we have also at the same time trying to understand the cyber threat environment beyond the European scale. Therefore, we launched this big European project 1 year ago in November 2022. And of course, our objective is, as at SWP at the same time, we try to inform policymaking within this field of cybersecurity, and of course, raise awareness of cybersecurity threats also for the wider public. And this is achieved through this, and this is, I think, very innovative, a data-driven analysis and assessment of not only technical aspects and features of these incidents, but also trying to frame them in a political and legal aspect and trying to understand these cyber conflicts from an interdisciplinary point of view.
Well, Anna Greet, you've just mentioned active cyber defense. So perhaps we can talk about that. Jakob, the repository focuses on this, on active cyber defense. What is it exactly and why is it necessary?
Let me perhaps answer the second question first, because whether it's necessary is still very much up for debate and heavily under discussion, especially in Germany at the moment. And the answer to this question also is heavily shaped by what is understood by active cyber defense. That is a box of different measures, and I'll give you a couple of examples in a moment. But perhaps to the question, how did we get here? Why are we talking about active cyber defense, and what distinguishes it from other security measures? I think it's key to note that it's rooted in the perception that some cyber threats are hard to defend against. For example, because perpetrators are out of reach, as might be the case with certain ransomware groups that operate from safe havens, where it is difficult to find cooperation through existing legal channels, or with respect to certain activity where the benefits of the attackers outweighs the costs that diplomatic instruments can bring to bear. Espionage, especially for economic advantage, is an example one might think of in this regard. So looking at the most intrusive side, if you're moving up against an attacker and you're looking to disrupt and dismantle the infrastructure to degrade the tools, you have to recognize that you probably are no longer in the space that you as a defender control. So we're talking about systems and infrastructure that is in the hands of the attackers, or systems that belong to innocent bystanders, or systems of allies. So what this means is active cyber defense does not just involve an attacker and the defender, but potentially anyone who's on the field. And in a globally connected internet, that can potentially involve a significant number of actors.
Well, so this sounds highly complex. Anna Greet, are these cybercrime defense measures actually already in place? And has there been a fundamental shift from previously more reactive measures to this kind of proactive defense policy?
Of course, they are partly in place, but we have to distinguish here between the member state level and the European Union level in cybersecurity. And I think that the European Union debate is very much, of course, influencing our national debate on cybersecurity. And it started really right after the entry of the Lisbon Treaty in 2009, that on the European scale, the decision or the debate arose that the EU also needs a kind of approach to cybersecurity. And the lowest common denominator on the European level is really here trying to increase the resilience of the information and communication technology infrastructure in the European Union, and especially in the digital single market. And therefore, the European Union launched a lot of initiatives in this place for building up resilience in the digital internal markets. So this is important to mention because it makes clear that cybersecurity is not only a business for the member state and for the governmental level. It's also something, a task for companies, but also for end users. So we all have to do our homework that we have in place a more safe and secure infrastructure. Secondly, the fight against cybercrime is also a business where the European Union comes into play because we have Europol, and Europol is also in charge of coordinating member states and member states' governments trying to put in place rule of law enforcement and or mutual legal assistance for extradition when it comes to the fight against cybercrime. So we should not underestimate the role Europol is playing here also. And we are observing now a widespread pinpricks. This is the work from hackers and from hacker groups acting on behalf of governments and states against European countries. And this cannot be tackled only with measures taken for building up a resilient infrastructure system, or cannot be tackled by Europol or national federal police agencies. So we need here enforced cyber diplomacy on the European level, so imposing stronger sanctions against cyber attackers. And at the same time, there is also this push for building up a stronger European cyber defense capability. So to wrap it up, we began in the European Union with this strategy of building up resilience, strengthening the fight against cybercrime in the beginning, but now shifting more in this continuum between peace and war to build up also a cyber defense capability on the level of the European Union. And these measures, of course, are highly disputed among the governments. We need to find and to define a common ground in the European Union. And we are in the mid of this process now.
Anna Greet has described the difficulties of this on a European level and also spoken about the necessity of a European approach and of your project. But Jakob, to what extent does Europe rely on international norms when it comes to strategy? And does Europe need to take a different tack from, for instance, the US?
It's very interesting that you frame this approach to norms in terms of strategy, because I think up until now, most of the time, the conversation around international norms has been linked to what kind of cyberspace Europe, its member states, if we're talking about the European Union, are are looking to shape through its international partnerships. But the strategy element, I think, is opening an interesting new perspective to this, especially if we think about how active cyber defense comes into the picture in whichever shape or form it would come to be adopted by different member states if they choose to move in this direction. And it's a recognition that ultimately you're not just defending networks, but you also are defending these norms. So whatever measures you are pursuing, they need to be designed so that they provide protection, of course, to the systems and networks that you want to shield.
You've both touched upon this to a certain extent, but how unified are EU member states and other European countries when it comes to cyber defense policies?
First of all, I think you have to keep in mind that we see a lot of cyber incidents all over Europe, but we do not have at the moment really this exchange among the member states, what is going on really on a European scale. So when a government is observing the cyberspace, it's very much looking on the national realm. And it's not so much interested in the same time what is going on in Spain or what is going on in Italy at the same time. Are hospitals equally also attacked as in Germany, for example? So, but when we now observing that this expansion to critical infrastructure is happening and is affecting all end users all over Europe, the question is then, so when is the threshold crossed that we have to impose, for example, the solidarity clause according to Article 222 on the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union, so that we show solidarity in our countermeasures among the European states? Or when should we activate the mutual assistance clause in cyber defense? It's also possible that a lot of governmental structures or political systems are affected at the same time. So firstly, we have to define the threshold. And this is really hard political work among the European governments. Secondly, there is, of course, this debate, should we strengthen more the fight against cybercrime? So should we empower more Europol and ENISA? Or is it better really to go directly into this cyber defense policy and part? Or should we do all at the same time? What the Europeans now are trying to do is really to strengthen all these different measures with the aim to strengthen the naming and shaming of the cyber attackers, to improve the cost-benefit balance in favor of deterrence, and having a better political answer, for example, when it comes to attribution policy, to name the responsible attackers, not only from a political point of view, but also from a technical and legal perspective. That is now disputed among the member states, of course. And when you look at the Baltic countries, of course, they look firstly at the cyber defense part. When you look at Germany, they are looking more at the cybercrime part. So, and this is grounded, of course, in the different traditions the member states have in the European Union.
And Jakob, what is your take on this? You're in Brussels right now.
Annegret has already terrifically set us up and illustrated all the different tools that need to be brought together for combined effect, because it's really through the synergies between different capabilities that we can hope to make a dent in the threat activity that we are confronting. I really like an image that the head of NATO's cyber section has been using, and he's been trying to summarize this up by looking at this collection of capabilities. He's been looking at the different strengths among member states as a strategic onion. There is a common core, shared values that bring member states together, but then there are differences in terms of the tools and also the political configurations in different member states when it comes to deploying one capability or another. But this really is the strength that alliances like NATO or a union like we have it with the EU can bring to tackling cyber threats. It's really this collection of different capabilities and strengths that complement each other.
Well, finally, the takeaways from your project. What improvements are needed to increase cybersecurity, and specifically Germany? Where does it sit on the scale? Germany is not really known for its digital capabilities, but rather for its reluctance to let go of paper, rubber stamps and copper wires. How could it do better, and what is being done, Annegret?
I think firstly, what we see is when we would like to strengthen cyber diplomacy, we need a robust attribution policies. So based on the identification of the attacker, according what we also do in our project, according to a technical, political and legal standard. And that is really needed. Secondly, I think we need a better enforcement of existing law. And here I think for the national debate, the national security strategy and its implementation comes into play, because here, of course, we are discussing what kind of law is needed also on a national realm. And on the national realm, of course, we need a very strong parliamentary oversight of a new active cyber defense policy when it should happen on a national basis. And the second solution, what I see, is really strengthening the European Union level, because the German system is very cumbersome. It has its tradition in a very strong constitution, with very strong constitutional principles, and that is also good. But there is potential and room of maneuver on the European Union level. And for example, think of a better and quicker enforcement of our solidarity clause in the European Union. Use the capabilities we have among the European Union. For this, we need more trust and confidence building measures among the European for information exchange, using the External Action Service quicker with qualified majority voting in the Council, putting in place faster cyber sanctions against responsible attackers. So there is a lot on the table that can be done. And therefore, improvement is needed for a better cyber diplomacy. And for this, we need a very good source code and an open source academically and interdisciplinary database, which the European repository is offering.
Well, that's all we have time for on the podcast this week. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Annegret Bendyk and Jakob Bond. You can access their latest research project, the European Repository of Cyber Incidents, on the SWP website at www.swp-berlin.org. We'll make sure to put the full link in the podcast show notes. And if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify. You can also keep up to date with the latest research from SWP on X, formerly Twitter, and on LinkedIn. So until next time, it's goodbye from our guests.
Goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
And also from me, Esme Nicholson. Goodbye, and thank you for tuning in.